Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hey, Jackie Cation here in my garage. Very exciting. Doing a Zoom Dork Forest with Matt Weinhold. Welcome back to the program.
Ooh, always a pleasure.
Matt Weinhold, you may remember him, Rangers of the Dork Forest, as a guy who knows about old movies. Scary movies, monster movies, and mostly just that. But he's also a stand-up comic, one of my favorites. Hasn't done it in a while because you're writing the comedy now.
I'm writing and other things, yeah.
Right, and you guys, go find the album. You have at least one old album that I fucking love.
Yes, so. And by the way, this was before canceling and all of that nonsense.
Oh, right, right. So, So, it may reek of 1997.
Yes.
Is what he's saying.
I am absolutely saying that. But you know, think
grain
of it
salt. Feel free to skip a track.
Sure. You know what? No one was out to hurt. It was simply a matter of what we thought was just funny at the time.
And we have, the civilization moves very slowly.
Yes,
and so
we've evolved.
It.
And if I did. Yes. A CD now, it would be a whole kind of different thing.
Very different. Yeah. The things addressed would be very different.
It would be done in a different way, let's just say.
Right. Feel free to go find some tracks in my 1999 album and go, yeah, that's not great. So, but Matt Weinhold has a podcast called Monster Party
I
have been on several times. Is it just, would people go to monsterparty.com? Or is it just at Monster Party on Instagram and Twitter and whatnot?
It is wherever podcasts are found. So okay. You can go to any of the, you know, we have a Libsyn.
Apple Podcast.
Yeah, but like go to just, yeah. I mean, if you Google it, boom, there's like 9 different ways to access it. And so right. That just makes it easier. So you don't have to remember a thing or write anything down. Just look for Monster Party Podcasts and you'll find it.
By God, you will.
Yes. And I don't just do the show alone. I have these cohorts, these friends of mine, and their names
for
are
decades.
For decades. Yeah, yes, for decades. Yeah. Sean Sheridan, James Gonis, Larry Stroth. And what we do is we get together and we just hang out. We have a party. We literally have a party for like 2.5 hours sometimes,
right.
Or longer even. It's gone that long.
Oh, it is a long convoluted conversation,
yes.
About whatever monster related talk is about to happen, or science fiction,
sure.
Or
fantasy,
yeah.
Animation. We're monster kids, but we're also into anything genre. We love superheroes.
Do you
so,
edit it
yeah.
down?
I've always wondered because I've never listened to an episode, and I've been on three times.
You and who would expect you to? It's their.
I can't even listen
Ken
to this
Burns
one.
Length. So. Yeah, but they're edited down. What we do is we like to just clean things up. Sometimes you'll get maybe somebody who, you know, there's some gaps for whatever reason where they're trying to think of something. Yeah, and I just like to clean all that stuff up. But for the most part, it really is, you know, the spirit of it is there.
And it runs a couple hours, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And back in the day, before COVID, what we would do, mm-hmm. as you know, is we would, you know, ask our guests what kind of drink they would like or what kind of food. We get food. We'd have dinner before we did this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then we would have drinks while we're doing the podcast. It was a party and it still is. We'd like to think of it as a virtual party, but I guess by the time you got it, it was virtual.
Yeah, it was. I've been over to your house a couple of times to do it, but Monster Party, super fun. And so every October, I think, you know, I should get one of those guys. And I believe everyone from that list of co-hosts and yourself have been on the program.
That's true.
And
I don't know. Was James on there?
I believe James has been on.
Okay. All right.
But if not, James is due.
All right.
And everybody can come back on.
Okay.
Because these are diamonds. These are multifaceted dorks, you guys. There are many sides.
Yes.
They have access to other information that we have not yet gotten.
They've paid their dues. They put in the time.
Right. They got on the ground floor of some serious dorkdoms.
Big time.
And there's closets and
shelves
lockers
and cases and all kinds of things.
Yes, yes. But we're going to talk about some fun movies to watch at Halloween, right? You picked a bunch of movies, a bunch of kind of good movies, right?
I did, but before we get this going, I hate to turn this on you, but I'm just curious because I know that you're not necessarily a huge horror fan. I know you have appreciation.
Because of The Dork Forest, more appreciated what people, I've done a lot of episodes about horror and monster movies and what people get out of them. And one of the last two times, I forget who the guest was, but they actually pointed out that what they really got out of it was that they have a lot of anxiety and watching a horror film actually helps bleed some of that off.
It's true. It really is true. It's cathartic. And, you know, people always use the roller coaster analogy, and it's kind of like that. But also, the thing that gets me about horror movies is that they're never given their due. Like,
what is their due?
Well, the fact that people write them off as this kind of lowbrow, lesser art form, when I would say that some of the most intense drama, some of the best acting I've seen in films has come out of horror movies. And
really?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Hereditary, for example.
Okay.
Everybody in that movie should have won an Oscar. Everybody
is
great.
What year did Hereditary come out?
This is fairly recent. This is in the 2000s. This is about, I want to say like, I don't have it right in front of me, but I know it's like within the past like 6 years or something like that. But, and then it was followed up. It was Ari Aster is the director, and then he followed it up with Midsommar, which is also both of these movies are very uncomfortable and really, really scary.
Yeah.
But just so well acted. And I think the stuff of drama, I mean, if you're looking for drama, what could be better than a horror movie where your life is at stake? It's not just dealing with your relationship. And
the stakes are very much higher than Homeward
Bound. That guy wants to kill you.
Yes.
He wants to possess your soul. He wants to do all these horrible things, or she, or it. But I just feel like just now we're starting, like with Get Out, I think we're starting to see a little bit more of an appreciation for what a horror film can do, that it can be metaphor. You know, it can attack, social issues and racial issues in this way that we didn't think.
Has it always been that way? Have they always done that? Do you think?
Well, I think to a certain extent, because there are some horror movies where the idea is just to scare you. And then there are movies that are like, you know, done from the classics, like Dracula. There's all kinds of subtexts about sex and, you know, religion and control. And it's, you know, it's multi-layered. Okay. But
that's true.
Yeah.
Because it is about, it is the sexy vampire, and obviously religion's all over it.
Sure.
And so the messages are, do you think, because I have the same opinion, you know, everything's been sort of dismissed as not classical, right? I mean, science fiction for
comic books,
decades.
For sure.
Comic books, for sure. Romance novels. I mean, all of this stuff that is mass consumed has never been appreciated. And horror has that same thing.
Well, and also I think that, you know, when those early Universal films came out, like Dracula and Frankenstein, and you go back and you read some of the early reviews, you know, people always couch them in like, well, for this type of thing, it's really effective and good. And I mean, you watch Bride of Frankenstein, and if you don't come out of that thing thinking that this work is a work of genius from every level, from acting to direction to set decoration to cinematography, it's just gorgeous in every way. And I think that it took people time, because they're always fighting with the idea that because it's scary, I think people want to dismiss it, like, because it really gets to them. It gets to their soft white underbelly. And I don't think people like that at all.
Right. No, they're made genuinely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what about, but I mean, when you think about the classics, you know, how many times has Wuthering Heights been recommended to me? And I was like, I can't watch this sad sack dude make terrible life choices over and over again.
Different kind of horror.
But horror movies sometimes do that for me, where I'm just like, why would you go in the basement? Why would you go in the I guess the most horrifying movie would be for me is someone who's made no bad choices. They live defensively, but not overly defensively. They trust, they have a good life. And then for some reason, they're still snatched and murdered. And then, or they're still snatched and tortured. And then they have to fight a bad guy. And that, I think a superhero movie, right? I mean, that's what it feels like, where someone has done all the right things, and then there's some weird supervillain who just has more power and gets you.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you have a monster, it's always a good person. Or, I mean, Halloween, what you just described, Halloween, I think, fits in that mold, because Jamie Lee Curtis in that movie she's so kind of innocent and nice. And she's not looking for trouble. She's not like her slutty friends, you know. She's
nice.
And a polite, good person. And then this thing happened to her. This force comes into her life. And that's the other thing, too, is that I know there's been a lot of discussion over the years about how horror movies portray women. And I will say this, just like any other genre, there's not one type of horror movie. There are good horror movies. There are bad horror movies. There are exploitation horror movies. There are horror movies that are too over the top or are just plain awful. But when you take a movie like Halloween, where you have the female protagonist who you would see as maybe someone who is not at all equipped to deal with this situation.
Yeah.
And she's kicking ass. You know, and smart, and, you know, all the things that you learned about her character are being put into play, and she's protecting these little kids. And,
oh, wow.
And I just love Halloween. I think it's about as perfect. I hate to call it a slasher, because it was kind of pre-slasher. Of course, I think it did spark a bit of the slasher wave. But Halloween is
about a mass murderer, right? And,
well, it's about a kid, Michael Myers, who, as a
this
little...
This could be a spoiler thing, but I think Halloween was made in the 12th century. Right. So get over
That's how I feel, too, when we're on our podcast. It's like, you know, my friend Larry will go, oh, well, don't tell him. I'm like, look, come on. We all know what Dracula's all about, okay?
I'm
not giving anything away. But with Halloween, I think that... You know, you've got this little kid, and he murders his sister. And he's caught. He's put away into this insane asylum. And then Donald Pleasance is going in there and he's trying to reach him. He's like a psychologist. And he's trying to get into this kid's mind and sure. see what made him do this. And after years of trying to reach him, he suddenly comes upon. Now, this isn't great. This is not a great way to deal with someone like this, but it works right. in a movie. He suddenly decides that the kid is pure evil. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And then right. is committed
he's just
to
broken.
Well, he's like, there's no fixing this kid. When you look into his eyes, there's nothing there. We have to just keep him away from other people for the rest of his life. But he escapes.
Otherwise, and, shorter movie. Yes.
Yeah. And wreaks havoc. And it.
So we learn yeah. in the first part of that movie that this is a monster. This is a stormtrooper. This is a someone that you can kill with impunity.
Yeah, you're not. This is not
There's
one of those.
No sympathy.
No, it's not one of those villains where you go, well, he thinks he's doing the right thing. I don't know, but like, but the idea is he's more of he's a force.
Yeah.
And then this movie, I believe, started the trend of like you kill him, but just when you think he's dead, he's not dead, and he just keeps coming back. Jason took that to like ridiculous heights.
Even in the movie, because I remember in Terminator. When I saw Terminator, I had not seen Halloween. And I believe Terminator came out after Halloween. And Terminator gets killed, but he's not killed. And then he gets cut in half. And I literally was on what I thought was a date. It wasn't. Anyway, so I literally...
I've been on those.
So I literally turned to my friend, Bob, and I said to him, hey, if this guy, if his torso crawls at our hero here, I might storm out. And then he's just crawling in it as a torso. And,
so good.
So, but did that sort of start with Halloween? Is he killed, but not killed?
I mean,
or is you talking about Halloween 2?
Well, Halloween 2, the problem with Halloween 2, even though John Carpenter had something to do with it. It really isn't in the same league as Halloween. I mean, rarely are sequels. I mean, I would say Aliens is the exception, maybe. But what worked with Aliens is they made a different kind of movie. With Halloween became more of a slasher, a traditional slasher movie. And it's just, I think it's clunky. And I think it's doesn't have the artistry that the first one had. And because it feels like a Jason movie.
Okay. And Halloween, this kid is now an adult and he goes out into the world. He escapes.
He finds,
and
starts killing people all over the place, but in a way that no one really knows that it's quite happening yet.
Okay.
And so he finds this, like these mechanics overalls. And he goes into a Halloween store and he finds the mask, which, do you know about the mask?
I don't.
The mask does, so
it
so,
isn't the Jason mask. The Jason mask I know about because of
stand-up. The hockey mask.
Yeah.
But
is that Halloween?
No, Halloween is a mask that's a white face, just like a white human face with this hair that they, like fake hair that they put on top. And the story is this mask was actually a William Shatner mask that they found that was from, I think it was Star Trek, the motion. I forget which movie they created this mask for, but it's a William Shatner mask that they altered. And if you look at it, you'll go like, oh, I kind of see it a little bit.
The features of William Shatner.
Yeah. And if you like look up on Google, Captain Kirk Halloween mask, and you'll go, oh, okay, there it is.
Is it?
It's super spooky.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see that thing, and what's great about that first one is it just.
Is it this?
It is.
Is this the mask?
That is it. And that looks like it. That's from a later incarnation. That's from one of the remakes. But it basically is the same thing, though.
Okay.
They've made it a little more weathered. In the original movie, it's fairly new. And it's just this white ghostly. Pallor.
It's just so it's a very just like white paint.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And
because it was just a Star Trek, an old prop from a Star Trek movie.
Well, it's actually a mask that was mass produced for kids. Like, you know, hey, you want to be Captain Kirk? Which I never understood that thing of like a mask of a human face.
Right.
You know, but if you really want to look like Captain Kirk, you get this rubber mask and you can buy that.
They're doing these masks over your face where you can make it look like your smile.
Masks. Oh yeah. We were just looking at this last night. It's super brilliant. Spooky. Totally
it's
brilliant.
Brilliant, but it's very much like nobody tell me to smile because I'm smiling.
Yeah, it's like something out of the Squid Game.
Right. Which was not for me either. Because here's some of the things with horror movies is when they're, because Halloween sounds kind of amazing, right? There's an arc to it, right? There's a story where he escapes, he starts murdering people. He runs into our completely sane, good girl, decent human being who happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Is that what Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. And, you know.
And so she rises to the occasion and fights back?
Yes. And what's great about Halloween is that unlike slasher movies, the majority of them, there's actually very little blood. It's done very, I guess, tastefully, but like,
well,
but like there's some real, but it's creepy. John Carpenter sets the mood. There's a slow build and most of the scares are just seeing this guy. Like all of a sudden she thinks she keeps seeing this guy.
Right.
And he keeps showing up in all these weird places. And at one point she's walking along with her friend. And she sees this guy and then he like ducks behind some bushes and she's like, oh, there's that guy I saw. And so her brassy friend, you know, goes over there and, hey, jerk, come on out. And then there's nobody there. And there's a good amount of scenes like that, but they're so well done. They're so creepy. And so it's a slow build. And when the violence happens, it's not like you're waiting in it. So I think this would be, if you were going to do a film like this, I think this would be good for you because it's not too over the top.
I was slightly scared by that Don Knotts movie. So
another great Halloween movie, by the way.
I bought that DVD because of
it. So good. Ghost and Mr. Chicken, everybody.
Ghost and Mr. Chicken. That one I bought. And I also bought all, and they are slightly, there's some jump scares in them.
Okay.
And they are the Abbott and Costello movie.
Well, now you're talking my language. Great. Yeah. I mean, Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein.
Yes.
Is up there in, it might be the greatest horror comedy of all time.
It's hilarious and scary.
And scary. They play the horror straight.
Yes. They play the horror straight. So every Halloween, like I used to, I would try to watch Nightmare Before Christmas, but I don't care anymore.
Too many songs.
Too many, and I love a musical. Nice. Those aren't my songs. They aren't for me. So I actually got rid of Nightmare Before Christmas, donated it, and went full on just, and then I'll watch A Thin Man, which isn't it's not a Halloween.
But they're so good. Oh.
They are so good. And the sheer enormity of drinking just makes you, there's some tension there.
Makes me happy to be alive. It really is. Just like, why can't I live this life?
Right. No blackouts. They just keep going, you guys. And they don't even have a valet to take them home.
No,
they sort of have each other.
You'll make it home.
And, but there were two that were great. I think there's five Abbott and Costello's.
I don't have that number. There's a mummy one, which was okay. Not so good.
Yeah, not great.
Certainly not scary.
No. I think Frankenstein and I think Dracula. What was the other one that was really good?
Well, there was Abbott and Costello Meets the Invisible Man, which is not really scary, but actually a pretty good story. And I enjoyed the movie.
Genuinely uncomfortable.
Yeah. Abbott and Costello Meets the Killer, which is another. That one's spookier.
Okay.
And then I have a personal fondness for Abbott and Costello Meets Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I love the makeup.
Yes.
It's kind of Wolfman-y, you know?
Right. It's super Wolfman-y. Jekyll and Hyde and Frankenstein are my favorites. Invisible Man is actually, I would posit that it's more of a drama than a comedy.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That the guy who becomes invisible, you're like, no, creepoid. You're actually doing this for Invisible Man reasons. The original.
And they're
like,
never book. Good.
They are not good. Nobody's ever chosen. They're like, you know what I really want to do? And whether it's some people are like, I want to overhear things. You're like, you're never going to hear anything good. Not about yourself anyway.
Well, you've read the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yes.
So, and that Invisible Man. Ooh.
Oh my God.
That's a bad dude.
That is not a good person.
No.
He is. It is. Somebody recommended some book where it was it must have started out as fan fiction.
As all good things do.
As all media. Not. And I was almost said something relatively sweeping. But but it was this book about a guy who could control time travel. And what he used it for was to pause the world and give women orgasms.
That and sounds like fan fiction.
That sounds like a real, like, porny, you know, this yes, is what I would do with it. Mm-hmm. Doing the Lord's work. And you're like, no, you should learn how to do that in real time, brother. And then you wouldn't
be
have
more
to.
More rewarding.
Right. You'd get credit for it. The fact that you don't want credit for it. Kind of creepy. And so my friend who recommended this book, I was like, this is an interesting glimpse into your sexual fantasies. And I was like, all right, we all.
Oh my God. Then half the movies, look, there's so many films that I enjoy.
Yeah.
And there are ones that are disturbing and uncomfortable and maybe even go into a really not so nice place. Mm-hmm. But I see the bigger point. And
sometimes and the catharsis, yeah.
Yeah, the catharsis. And there's a movie called Martyrs. And again, I don't have the date right in front of me, but it's a French film, but
okay.
It was, so it's all about some girl who was kidnapped and tortured. She goes back when she's older to find the people who did it. And I don't want to give too much away, but she's like, her and her friend are sucked into this weird, horrible world. And okay. this could be described as torture porn.
Yep.
But it's not. There okay. is a lot of torture in it, but that's mm-hmm. not the point of it. The point of why the torture is happening is actually really clever. Now, this okay. is a movie you should never see.
Oh,
it would destroy you. It's
right.
It's
I don't,
horrible.
I don't need something to eat me from the inside.
No. But for someone who I don't have a line to cross.
Right.
I enjoyed this because I thought where it went was like, yeah. man, I did not expect this.
Right.
And so I love that. I like to make a horror movie that genuinely surprises you. Is
I would
something.
Rather be in a horror movie than watch a horror movie. I would rather have a horrible thing happen to me than to watch a horror movie. Do you know why? Because there's more, I feel like there's more agency. Like I have a better chance. Like when terrible things have happened to me, me responding to them, when mediocre bad things happen to me, by the way, I have a hard time taking the reins, but when something truly terrible happens to me,
okay.
I tend to rise to the occasion and take the reins back. But when something is just middling, like someone is just vaguely rude to me repeatedly, that's not torture. But to some extent, it's kind of more a situation where I feel powerless and I don't do anything about it. But if someone is literally threatening me, I rise more to the occasion and confront them and say, hey, don't do that. That's not okay.
Well, in a horror movie, mm-hmm. You have, and I've heard people talk about this feeling that they get, this experience when maybe they're in warfare or they're in some sort of live or die situation. I've heard them describe the feeling as like they've never felt more alive because, and I can understand that, not that it's necessarily a fun thing or a good thing, but you're now all your senses are at play and you know, it's life or death. And this is, you're truly in the moment. Mm-hmm. And to have those transcendent experiences, yeah, I can see that coming from something terribly horrible. I don't want to test this because maybe I'm not all that into transcendent experiences, like personally.
Right. And to live like 1 degree away from it is to watch that on a screen and to go, I see how this is being like a movie.
It's right. It's total like if you showed me, say, Faces of Death, you remember that whole series?
Oh, yeah. Like a snuff film.
Yeah,
right?
Like real people dying. Yeah. Horrible. I can't take 1 second of that.
Oh, really?
A comic friend of mine showed me this video of some comptroller, I forget where it was, but he killed himself. He shot himself at a press conference. Blew his brains out.
Yeah.
And the camera zooms in. Whoever, like, I know that there were a bunch of different cameras covering this thing, and one of the cameras zoomed in on his head as blood shot out his nose. And it was, it haunted me for years.
Right. It's
that
still
I don't
effects.
Like. That is,
no.
I
no,
want,
you don't want
fake horror.
Yes. You,
I
you want
fake
some,
horror.
Yes.
But even with fake horror, see, here's another thing that people don't realize about horror movies, and that is that horror movies teach you things. And okay. I think I might have avoided some scrapes and bad situations in my life because I watched horror movies. There, you know, you watch a horror movie, you go like, don't go with that guy. When that guy sends you the note, says, hey, come here because I've got this going on. Don't do it. Don't go.
Don't
look
go.
Behind you. Look behind
right?
you.
Be aware of your surroundings.
I don't know how many times I look behind me.
Yeah.
And I feel like that saved my life. And that's all from horror movies.
That's for more. There is, it does, I mean, that's like one of those things where you hear about people yelling at the screen, don't go in the basement.
Right, yeah.
Don't part ways, you know, don't break up the party, you know, which is something you can learn from Dungeons and Dragons. Never break up the party.
I would say that's situational, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because there are some times where the party, see, I have a deep distrust of groups.
Okay.
I think you get into a group of people who aren't so great and they'll just get you killed. I've been on some camping trips where I was like, oh no, you're going to kill us all.
I have did not see that coming.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had gone camping.
I enough maybe to have three times
bad, with bad
That's why
choices.
I don't camp.
Yeah.
That's why I don't go camping. Terrible. And yeah. So at least when you're by yourself in certain circumstances, you're calling the shots.
True. That is true. It's every time I've left there, I have several stories that end and then I wasn't killed. Because
I need to hear all of them.
Well, because famously, like one I think is on an album, it's just where I was at a bar and I was bored. I was staying with my sister and it was boring. So I went to look to play video games and have a beer in the middle of the afternoon. And then all of a sudden it was 11 o'clock at night and I was still at this bar and I had made friends with the career drunks at the bar. And so one of them was an older guy, 70s. And so this is easily 30 years ago, by the way.
Okay.
And so it's 11 o'clock and he's like, hey, I'm going to another bar. You want to come with me? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah. And so we get into his Cadillac and I drive into the night with some dude in his car and we go to another bar and I don't know where I am in Milwaukee and I'm starting to become enormously drunk. And so then it's 2 a.m. and he's like, do you want to, do you, and he
go back
yeah,
to
he,
his place?
Yeah, go back to his place. He's like, and he's, you know, he's got, of course, the sad sack story about how long it's been and how he's sad and he's hasn't gotten laid in a long time. And I remember
Never
I was
works.
23 and I thought to myself, I could fuck this guy. It's not going to kill me. And,
you know what? You're just good people.
Well, and, you know, I think some people are horrified. I think I was
no,
because
I don't.
But the thing is, I put my hand on his leg in the car.
Okay.
I had no time, and here's the punchline. At no time did I touch the little soldier from the big war.
Got it.
So, and he came in that moment because it had been, he was so, And the weirdest thing about this story.
Fantastic.
The weirdest thing about this story is that then he had to, he was like, I'll drive you home now. But I have to go back to my place because I have to change my pants. And so we stop off at his apartment. He goes into the other room. And I don't know if you know this about me, but if there is no reason, the same reason at 3 PM I left my sister's house, I left this guy's apartment because I was bored. And so I walk out into the night. It's 3:00 AM. And I don't know where I am in Milwaukee. And I walk around. I run into, he was a grad student from, I believe, Somalia. I had sex with that guy. It isn't that, and then I wasn't killed, you guys. So.
That is, you know, all I can say is that's badass.
That, you know what that is? Lucky son of a bitch is what it is.
But Jackie, look, as comedians on the road, like that's a great story because that's like, we all did that. Everybody had that situation where, and this could be maybe a good premise for a horror film, the comic who's in town, who, you know, does the show. After the show, the people come up to him and say, hey, we thought you were great. And we're going to a party. You want to come? And you're like, well, I got nothing better to do. You never think of like, maybe they're going to take me someplace and kill me, or that they're going to take me someplace and actually take me to a party. But then I'm going to lose track of them. And then I won't know where I am, how to get home.
Right. And this was in the late 80s.
Of course it was.
So there's no Uber. There's no Lyft.
No.
There's, you know.
A cab. Come on. Forget it.
In Milwaukee? Good luck.
No.
And but the weirdest thing was, is there not a horror movie based on that premise?
If there is, I have not heard of it. But I think
that could be done.
Yeah, because as you were saying, you know, the times where I should have been killed.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times where all of a sudden, like, so I go with the people, we're going to the party, and then the guy and his girlfriend start an argument with each other, you know, and then they're yelling at each other, and then someone throws a punch and like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, what am I?
Where am where, I? How
what,
do I?
Why did I do this? And so, I mean, it's led to one of my, I've got these three rules of life, which is when you go someplace, always bring a coat or some sort of extra covering. Always have $40 in cash.
Okay.
And always bring your car.
Oh, drive separately.
Drive separately. If
at all possible.
If at all possible, yes.
Right. In the Cation family, we, youngest of six over here, we always drive separately. So that when the inevitable fight happens, you can throw down $12 just for your pasta. No tip. You leave the tip for them to cover. And then you storm out.
I want to be a fly on the wall.
It's one of the last times it happens was many years ago. My brother Russ stormed out, and his girlfriend, who is now his wife, but his girlfriend at the time, literally looked around the table and said, will one of you give me a ride home? And yes.
Stuff
yes,
of drama.
Yes. And better now. My brother Phil calls it a Cation-like moment. Whenever anybody said, oh, we came close to a Cation-like moment there. But then we come back.
As close as you want to really get, I think, to real life horror. Like that's
right.
This arena right there. That's enough for me. Like, I don't want to have a transcendent moment. I don't want to be more alive than I've ever felt. I'm fine with that. I'll watch it on TV.
Right. So, but the difference between horror movies and like is Open Water considered a horror movie?
Oh yeah, of course.
Because I was horrified. I was like, I would rather be killed by the process of Open Water than to have to sit through Open Water.
Well, I completely get that. And that's a movie that I don't think I would ever want to watch again. But I did enjoy it. I did think it was just really well done and scary.
They built the tension incredibly well, right?
I mean, Jaws is a horror movie, but it's also an action movie.
Yeah.
And it clings to your standard, structure of an action movie with a happy ending and all that kind of thing.
Whereas, and luckily,
And I was just saying, like, whereas, you know, I do enjoy a movie that's got the downbeat ending. Like, as long as it's, as long as it's fucked up, you know,
and it makes sense and that makes it's sense a downbeat.
And is, and is scary and is genuinely chills me.
Is there, so what you're saying is that there's a horror movie or a scary movie, that ends poorly for the heroes. Like it are essentially our anti-hero wins or the bad guy wins.
Cabin in the Woods. How about that one? You ever see that?
No. Was that Joss Whedon?
Yes.
It's okay.
Brilliant. It's great. And it plays on a lot of the tropes of various horror movies. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a science fiction movie in a weird way as well. But it does involve horror. It's Lovecraftian.
Okay.
In many ways. And
it's got a crack. It's got a kraken, or it has like a Cthulhu-y.
It's got a creature. It's, I don't want to give too much. I'm telling you, this is one really worth checking out. If you haven't seen
it. Cabin in the Woods. Okay.
Cabin in the Woods. But you know, that's one of those films where, God, I don't want to give anything away, but it's not the happiest of endings, let's just say.
Okay. And the thing, the weird thing about horror is that I can read it, but not in prose. I can only read the prose. My imagination takes over too much.
Oh,
and
really?
Film, things are too good. Like they make all the blood and all the dead people look too good. Like I saw Jaws at the perfect time, 35 years after it came out. And I was like, oh, that's a rubber jaw. That's a rubber shark right there. That's good. Anyway, so I could enjoy Jaws. But the but there are comic books that are genuinely scary, like Lock and Key.
Sure.
And a lot of BPRD, a lot of sort of Mike Mignola kind of Cthulhu-y kind of stuff that is spooky as all
Cthulhu
hell.
Cthulhu Tales is also very scary.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're scary, but because there's art and bubbles, for some reason I don't get as
right. It's got constantly reminding you this isn't really happening in your real world.
Right, right. Because when I dive into a prose, a fiction novel, I'm in that world. I just fall right into it. And the same sometimes with a movie, where I'm just like, I'm in, you know. And so I my suspension of disbelief is too great.
Yeah, you're a really great audience for this sort of thing.
I'm a really great audience, which is one of the reasons why I never recognize famous people. Because I'm like, oh, is that that guy who was in Suicide Squad? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I can never remember anyone's name, no matter how many, you know. But
I mean, well, it's not that but think of the joy of getting to meet them over and over again. Just how great. Where are you from? I told you last time. Well, let's hear it again. Is it a good one?
Yeah. I love this story, even though I have no memory of it whatsoever.
Have you tightened it up? Have you punched it up at all?
Workshop your origin story, if you could. But, I think that given what you're talking about, I think that if you went back to movies like maybe some older stuff where it's not so over the top, like I wouldn't suggest, even though one of my favorite movies of all time is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
I would never recommend that to you. I would recommend something like see Dracula, see the Spanish version of Dracula.
Oh,
which was shot at the exact same time on the exact same sets as the 1931 Todd Browning Dracula movie.
In English.
Yeah, it's a Spanish language Dracula movie. Completely separate cast, crew.
But they were parallel. They both used
shot
the same.
Exact same time. Huh. And it's a better movie than the original Dracula.
And I've told this story too many times, but that, remember that, famous people are in it, but it's about the Shadow of the Vampire.
Oh, I love that movie.
It's an amazing movie. It's an amazing.
That's scary.
It's terrifying. I watched it because I was told it was funny, and there are funny parts.
Yeah.
But I genuinely, did not sleep that night. So not cool.
Had you seen Nosferatu, the silent movie?
No.
Also great.
I saw,
scary.
Essentially, because it was based on that, right? It was supposedly the shooting of that and the casting of that.
Yes.
And that's why people, I think, thought it was funny. They're like, wouldn't it be funny if you cast an actual vampire to play a vampire? And then all of a sudden, turns out that guy's a vampire.
That's why trailers are useless in this day and age.
Right. I watched the damn thing and I was like, why am I still? But I'm in because
you're in.
There's so much great film being done right now. So much great acting. Yeah. The cinematography is so beautiful. It's the writing. We're in a golden age of storytelling. We really are.
Yeah. You know what you might enjoy? There was this producer named Val Lewton, and this mm-hmm. is, he made films around the time of, like, you know, in the 40s where Universal was doing their thing.
Yeah.
And what Val Lewton did is his films were a little bit more subtle when it came to the horror. A lot of it was not even shown. And there's people have argued that, well, that was, you know, for a way to get around a budget. But
oh, okay. Or but the Hays Code.
Or true. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but they're like the original Cat People is a Val Lewton movie.
Okay.
And they're shot so well and very, you know, the horror is very psychological.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just start watching all of the Val Lewton movies because I think you would enjoy them. They're not too they're creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're not gonna gross you out or make you have nightmares, I don't think, at least.
Right, right.
But yeah.
The Cat People, they didn't. I saw cats once, and that was terrifying. I didn't enjoy that.
My wife keeps like, "Come on, we should, you know, smoke some pot and watch that." Like,
I saw The Play accidentally.
I dated someone in The Play.
Oh my God!
I dated a dancer.
A dancer? Did you? So did you see the production
again and again and again?
Oh, so you've seen the production?
I worked at the theater where Cats was playing.
Yeah, that's. That's between you and your God. Holy smokes. That is a lot.
And that's a lot of cats. I will say that I was impressed by the set.
And the physicality.
The physicality is wonderful. And I did this is a little story for you. I became friends with a guy who was the understudy of the main cat.
Okay.
Old Deuteronomy, I believe his name is. I think that's his name, but I'm not sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long time. But anyway, so he was the understudy and he had been waiting, you know, this entire run to go on. And then this was in San Francisco and I got to be friends with him. And it was weird too. He was a Scientologist, but like the nicest, most proselytizing Scientologist ever come in contact. He's like, I can't tell you that this is for you. I don't know. I get something out of it. And he's like one of those guys. I'm like, okay. And we got along great.
Yeah.
And anyway, so the show is happening and the guy who normally plays old Deuteronomy can't make it. This is his moment, right?
Yeah.
So he's doing the show. Everything is going well. I'm watching this from the wings because by this point I work backstage. So like I can see it right from the wings. And so he's doing the final number and he's been great all the way through. But the end is him singing and I couldn't tell you the lyrics, but and cats and body singing this whole big, you know, monologue. Yep. And at one point you could tell he blanks, he just blanks and he gets a scared look on his face and I can see it close up
mm-hmm.
and he starts improvising. So he's like, and he keeps repeating words over again. So he's like, and cats and more than cats. And gradually everybody in the cast just like gets a weird look on their face too. And just kind of like sneaking a look at him like, you okay? Are you having a breakdown? Is this a heart attack? What's happening?
Did he get it back?
Not really. I think at the very end, he was able to remember like the last three lines of the song
to
close it out.
Right.
But it was funny, but it was also like, oh, dude.
That's brutal. That's brutal.
Yeah. And his one shot, you know?
Yeah.
And the next day, he was also a really funny cartoonist. And so he did this cartoon call, and he called it The Maiming of Cats, because it's the naming of cats. Yeah. But anyway, I was just like, there's your horror right there.
There's right.
I don't know how many nightmares I've had with that scenario.
Right. The blanking out. It's that is brutal. I've never had it on stage until I did Last Comic Standing. And for some reason, after Last Comic Standing, I have had rare but recurring episodes of stage fright.
Is that right?
Yeah,
oh, I've had them. I've totally had them. Yeah. I had one where I had like I left my body. Like I was horrible time in my life. And I just went bye bye.
Everyone should know that I am talking with Matt Weinhold, and Matt Weinhold with three other gentlemen have has a beautiful podcast called Monster Party. Correct. And if you look up Monster Party podcast, I'm going to find it, put it in the notes, of course. But they talk monsters and sci-fi and all good things. And it's a party, you guys.
It is a party. And so come and join the party.
Join the party. That's it. Yeah. So what would you we're in the last 10 minutes here. What would you recommend for, these are some great recommendations for Halloween that maybe people haven't seen or haven't seen in a while, you know?
Well, I mean, in sort of our modern age, I don't know how many movies make it through to what most people watch their movies on. I know if you're a big fan of like Turner Classic Movies, you're going to be okay. But like, I mean, I would, you know, of Hammer Horror, right?
No.
Hammer was this studio in England, and they were the ones who did, like, they took all the Universal monsters and did their own scary, sexy color versions of it. So like the Christopher Lee as Dracula, you know, he played Dracula. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was Hammer.
Okay.
And so they did that movie, and then they did before that. I think the first one was the first of these Universal type films was The Curse of Frankenstein. And so they're updated. The blood is like this. It's not like any real blood you've seen in movies. It's this bright red blood.
Oh, it works. That cartoonish Doris Day kind of color. Yeah. Those bright
yes.
palette.
Very Technicolor kind of pizzazz blood. And I love all of the horror movies. Like, just go through Hammer Horror's catalog.
Okay.
And anything with, like, Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing is going to be good. I mean, there's one that, like, so they did Horror of Dracula, which was called Dracula in 1958. And that was the one with Christopher Lee. And then Peter Cushing is Van Helsing. And then after that movie, Christopher Lee didn't want to do anymore.
Okay.
So for a bunch of years, they did movies like the sequel to that Dracula movie was called Brides of Dracula, which is not even really a sequel. It's it has an entirely different vampire.
Yeah.
But I would say in a lot of ways, I kind of enjoy it more than that first Dracula film, because it's like they threw the kitchen sink of your, you know, your classic horror imagery, you know, somebody rising out of a graveyard and the sexy vampires. And it's well done. And it's one that people don't often think about when they think, because most people think that if they know of the Christopher Lee Dracula, they think that he just did all of them and they were all back to back. But no, he took a break. And so a lot of those films in between when he was doing the break are quite interesting.
Okay.
Like, there's a movie called
The Whole Catalog.
The Whole Catalog is right. Kiss of the Vampire. This is one that was done during that time. And in this, you know, normally in a vampire movie, they get someone that has all the Christian iconography, you know, who has a crucifix and holy water and all that. And that's how he fights the vampire. In this one, somebody uses black magic to fight black magic.
Ooh.
See?
Ooh,
interesting. Yeah,
that's a nice twist. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, any of those are great. There's one movie I really would like to recommend as an H.P. Lovecraft fan.
Okay.
And this is a 2005 silent film, an adaptation of The Call of Cthulhu. The movie is called The Call of Cthulhu.
Okay.
And this is a movie that people thought could never be made because H.P. Lovecraft's storytelling can be problematic. It doesn't necessarily follow the same structure as most narrative tales do.
It's not linear?
It's kind of all over the place.
Okay.
But in this movie, the way making it this silent film puts it in this different world, and they do some nice things where you have some characters to follow, but it's done like a silent film, and most of it was done on sound stages, and they use kind of old timey effects to, like, there's a scene where there's a ship on the ocean, and they create this fake ocean.
Oh wow!
With, like, gels and stuff, and it just and it looks phony but great.
Okay,
you know, yeah. And then Cthulhu shows up, stop motion.
Stop motion.
Stop motion.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's terrific.
Yeah,
and I think it's probably
that's a labor of love, is what that is.
Oh yeah,
is.
No, and these guys who Sean Branny and Andrew Lehman. Are part of this H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society. So they're big Lovecraft fans. And they just put their heart and soul into this thing. And it really shows. And I still think to this day, I would say it's the best Lovecraft movie that's ever been done.
Okay.
And I love all the Stuart Gordon stuff like Reanimator, but those are more, they just have kind of a satirical edge to them.
Okay.
Whereas,
is this thing played straight?
Totally straight. Totally straight.
Interesting.
Yeah. Black and white.
Yeah.
And it's exact. It really, they really did an amazing job of capturing the feel of a 20s era silent film.
Silent film of some guy who, I mean, the weird thing about Lovecraft is that he's almost, for me, almost impossible to read. And just because it's such a mess.
It's like learning a language.
Well, I have the same problem with Philip K. Dick. But I will say this, is those who have powered through and then written scripts from it, and the stories that have come from Cthulhu, much like Philip K. Dick, those stories are amazing, those movies. I mean, even, I think it wasn't Ben Stiller. It was, who was in Paycheck? Ben Affleck. And so it was Ben Affleck in his worst half a decade of movie making. Couldn't ruin Paycheck because the story was so interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. The story was interesting enough.
Dick, yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, it's fine. They're goofy, but I like the story so much. It's got a really interesting edge to it. So,
but guys, you know, writers like Lovecraft, that weird fiction genre of all these different, like Arthur Machen, you know, anybody who submitted stories to Weird Tales, Robert Bloch.
Oh yeah.
The world that Lovecraft created is really why you keep coming back. The imagery, and you know, sometimes it can stumble a little bit getting to the place.
Mm-hmm.
And just like any writer, some stories are better than others.
Yep.
But the world that he creates and these creatures, I mean, The Dunwich Horror is probably one of my favorite books of his, and it's never been done properly as a film.
Okay.
But there's a character in the story called his name is Wilbur Whately.
Okay.
And he is basically, I will spoil a little bit. He's basically half human and half Lovecraft monstrosity.
Okay.
But he covers it up because he has this weird goatish looking head.
Mm-hmm.
And then he covers up his hands and feet and he walks with a weird kind of limp.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he started talking, you know, perfect. He started speaking perfect English when he was like three, you know, so
okay. There's
all right. This crazy shit about him. Animals hate him. And then there's a point within the story where, you know, he's caught trying to steal the Necronomicon.
Okay. Which is the
evil
Bible
book.
Of
yeah,
the evil the, book. Yes.
Yes. The Lovecraftian demonic Bible.
Right.
And so he gets caught and you finally see what he is. Like his clothes have been torn open by these dogs and you see that. And the way that Lovecraft describes him of just, there are these suckers and little tentacles and there's a part of his skin that's pulsating different colors. And it's just, a nightmare. And it's like, to me, it's one of the most enjoyable, like, two pages of description that I've read.
Right, right. It's so much, I mean, I will say that about it. It's so much better than, it's like we're trying to read Zane Grey describe the mountains in 1860. And you're like, oh, it's very purple. Okay.
Yeah,
sage.
No, I get it.
Okay.
And, it's a beautiful day. I understand.
It's great. Is there going to be a lone guy who's going to help some lady or a kid with a gun? Anything like that going to happen, cowboy dude? Anyway, so but I will. I just remembered when back about 5 or so minutes ago that there was an episode I did last Halloween with a comic named Mary Bacay, who is in love with, she loves all things Chinese. She speaks Chinese. She's an accountant in addition to being a stand-up comic. And she goes to Hong Kong and Singapore. She goes to the East a lot, and she likes to go, and she loves Chinese vampire movies.
Yeah, the hopping vampires.
The hopping vampires. She's like, the ghost movies are terrifying. The hopping vampires are hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
And so those are, we ended up watching one of those last Halloween. And it was, it didn't make any sense.
Mr. Vampire? Is that the one?
I don't know. They just, they have to bring the body of the hopping vampire. The monk has defeated him. But everybody keeps reopening the box, and he keeps jumping out again. So
it might be
to,
Mr. Vampire.
Yeah. It might be. And
there's one. Here's one you'll like. Here's a great one. So yeah. You know who Sammo Hung is?
Nope.
Sammo Hung was he was like a contemporary of Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
I think he had a TV show that I think it was called Martial Law, maybe.
Oh, okay.
But Sammo Hung was. He went to like the Peking Opera School, which was really tough, and how they learned how to do all these incredible stunts along with Jackie Chan. And so he does a lot of comedic martial arts movies. He's done quite a few.
Yeah.
And there's one called Spooky Encounters.
Ooh.
And it's Sammo Hung against, you know, supernatural madness. So that includes hopping vampires and all kinds of other stuff. And that one's just tremendous fun.
Just a delight to watch.
Spooky Encounters. You can find that pretty easily.
That's not, well, the one that we watched was on YouTube. The hopping vampire one that we did watch, I just Chromecast. I threw it to the TV. I got that kind of tech. And
there's a figure on eBay that's like pretty expensive, but it's of the hopping vampire with the little outfit and the hat. And I want it so badly.
So badly. It's ladies and gentlemen, it has been an hour. I just want to say, Matt, it's always a delight when you're on. Thank you so much for coming on
the
show.
Likewise. Yeah, please. Anytime. I'm telling you, I have a list that goes on and on and on.
Yeah, right. It turns out this is barely a dent. So
yes.
Monster Party podcast, look it up. Matt Weinhold. Look for the comedy album. Much of it is not offensive.
Please. Be gentle.
Be gentle. Right, right. Yeah. Take it in context and know that his heart's in the right place.
I'm just going to apologize now.
Right, right. Okay. Well, maybe not then. Just go listen to mine again.
There you go.
So, and Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?